High culture meets high technology at the bleeding edge of the radical right. Majority Rights Radio.
Hello.
Hello. Weave.
Yeah, one sec. Let me get headphones on. All right, what's up?
This is Soren.
Hey, Soren, how you doing?
Yeah. Events have happened this week, which basically drove you into doing an interview for Majority Rights Radio now rather than later. In fact, we'd never discussed doing it before. But when I discussed doing it this morning, you instantly saw that, understood that, in fact, better now than perhaps not.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right,
absolutely.
And we'll explain that in a bit. First, let me say how very pleased I am to be able to conduct this interview, and how much I've looked forward to talking to you and how much I anticipate enjoying it.
Absolutely, absolutely. A pleasure to be on.
Yeah, all right. So this is an immediate response to a post at Majority Rights. Let me introduce this. You had recent legal difficulties, and some events happened back in June, and you are under a court order not to talk about them, I understand, or some kind of gouges, not to talk about something. And you may have violated that, possibly, by publishing an essay yesterday at the Goatsy site. And I publicized this on Majority Rights. I put a link to it in the main post about it with a short quote. And in 24 hours, it's received only one comment. And you can think of this interview as being a response to the question this individual, Gorboduke, poses in the comment. So I thought I would read that out loud, okay? The whole comment. So Gorboduke writes, "Okay, I can see that a gross injustice has been done by the Moloch state to a decent and public-spirited individual." He means you. "And I'm aware of what seem like similar cases happening over here in the UK. Am I only speaking for myself, or are there any other perhaps UK-based Majority Rights readers?" You have to take that?
I know.
"Who don't understand fully the technical IT details he's talking about, or the use and abuse of US law that's being displayed by the authorities. Many of the commenters on the linked post may well be regular readers or followers and will have more idea of the situation. Despite putting in quite a bit of time last night, I found it difficult to discover exactly what's going on. One thing is clear: the sheer bloody triumphalistic nastiness of Normandy, whose comments brilliantly illustrate the old Furor Talmudicus or Odium Judaicus. Soren," he's referring to me, "please could you spare a few minutes to clarify things? Thanks." So in other words, he has no idea what this whole story is about. That's what it comes down to, at least as far as the IT stuff. So I don't know quite where to begin telling this story. Why don't I let you try?
All right. So basically, someone came to me, and they had found a vulnerability, sort of a privacy hole in AT&T's infrastructure, and this was earlier this month, earlier last month rather, June. So this basically very, very private, what should be privileged data was sitting publicly on an AT&T server, and it could be accessed by anybody. And so this person decided to scrape all that data and grab it all. And
this was basically you were sort of generating random hardware keys and querying to see if that key was linked with a record at the website, which it then would cough up.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Now AT&T contends that this was some sort of breach of hack that infiltrated their infrastructure, and that it was illegal as such. But you don't really need, historically, permission from a company to scrape what they've published. HTTP is a publishing mechanism, and the root of this word "publish" is similar to publication. For a reason, is that they're putting this data freely on the internet for anybody to grab.
Right.
And it was because they didn't really consider the ICC ID, which is this unique tag, to be privileged. You know, they
and
thought
what
that
is it was, the ICC? It's a unique tag for what?
For the SIM card that is in every iPad or phones, any GSM device.
Right.
You know, your cell phone, you know, your iPad, your iPhone, all these things have an ICC ID on the SIM.
And I'm guessing that every single one of these cards in every iPad, that all the serial numbers came out of one range.
No, they came out of a number of ranges, I think. I'm not quite sure on the details. I believe this person had found images on Flickr, like nerds had uploaded a picture of their SIM card split open.
Right.
So they'd be able to he took those pictures and he harvested all those numbers from those images, and that gave him extra insight, because ICC IDs are like, there's, you know, like trillions of potential numbers, but he was able to narrow down the iPad ranges by, you know, people posting pictures of their iPad SIMs.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah. But beyond that, you know, this is all publicly published data. It was all aggregated through, you know, industry standard techniques. There's no criminal act, underlying criminal act, in this. And my personal role in this is even less criminal, and is that someone came to me with a data set, you know, with a data set and an exploit, and told me, you know, and they did this relatively anonymously. Like, I don't have any proof of who they are. I don't know. And they did this because they cared about their country, and they had suspicions that the Russian mob might be using this, you know, in a manner that would be unsavory.
Wait, Russians?
Absolutely.
Russians up to these shenanigans? You don't believe all that, like, that spy stuff, do you?
Oh, that's not even spy stuff. I mean, there's news articles that where reporters have investigated, like, the malware shops in Russia. I mean, the vast majority of financial crime these days comes straight out of, you know, sort of the Russian financial mob. This isn't like, you know, spy KGB shit. This is like, you know, just profitable, straight up profitable enterprise. It's financially lucrative. And there are, I mean those.
So
those
what you're saying is, this exploit, if you had not done what you were just about to explain to me that you did, if you had not done that and someone in Russia had done that for the mob, they could potentially have committed a crime based on this not illegal act.
Yeah, correct.
So this was the raw material, the clay out of which some sort of brilliant web exploit, social engineering crime could have.
Yeah.
Let me guess. If I have this information, I have 100,000 names of possibly famous people and their iPods and the email addresses for those iPads. Then I could, for instance, send them mail, not from Nigeria, but some sort of sophisticated social engineering scam. And I'm just saying, things like
absolutely.
That
could be it. And in March, I released an exploit for all Safari browsers. And the reason this is relevant now is they patched this on the desktop Safari. They patched this on the iPhone, but they did not patch it on the iPad. So the iPad had, at this point, when I had received this data set and this, you know, when I received this information, the iPad had an active zero-day exploit that I knew about, potentially more.
Can you stop a second? Tell me what zero-day means in this context. I've heard that. It's interesting, but I don't exactly know what it means.
It means an exploit that isn't patched yet, you know. So basically, somebody could theoretically have taken the exploit which my team had sort of uncovered already, and used it to compromise these iPads or things that were on the same network as the iPad.
Why zero day?
Because it's basically, you know, the number of days that have been since patch, and if it's 0 day, it's not patched yet, you know?
Oh, okay, all right. Oh, good. All right, go on.
So yeah, I mean, there are active exploits in the iPad currently. There's still no patch out for that. There hasn't been a single iPad update since this whole fiasco. And I mean, they just patched 30 bugs in the iPhone. 30 bugs in the iPhone.
Wait, you're saying this exploit still hasn't been fixed?
Still hasn't been fixed. could still be done. Yeah. So having this data set in my hands,
right?
It was morally obligatory, you know. And there are, I'm sure, some people that I don't like on that list. But the fact is, even if I don't like them, they're ours. They're on our side, you know. And the first thing that you should show obligation to is your nation. And so basically, I had to go public with this, and I did it in the most efficient manner possible because I felt it was my duty for those, you know, potentially affected by this privacy hole and this iPad exploit to have knowledge of that so that they could mitigate it. You know, they could get a new SIM from AT&T and change their email address at the very least, and that would mitigate some of the issues of the leaked ICC ID and the email. And if they don't think it's a big deal, then that's fine, but at least they would have the ability to discern whether it was critical for them to mitigate this.
How can AT&T claim this was an important criminal exploit and not release a patch to prevent someone else from doing it?
Well, I mean they did patch the hole.
Oh, okay, they patched that AT&T hole.
They patched the privacy hole, but the fact is, if somebody had already scraped that data,
right?
That,
okay.
This is where I did wait for them to patch the hole before I went totally public. You know, I made sure they were informed, and I waited for them to patch the hole before I brought the data to Gawker so that Gawker could go through it.
But somebody else could have figured out the same thing and might have the same data at this point.
Yes, correct. At this point, that all those ICC IDs and emails are still at risk because who knows how many people have scraped that data in the, you know, and previously to the person who came to me discovering it, you know? So I went public with it, and I'm clearly a good publicist because there is no news publication in the world that does not somehow cover this story. You know, I put...
Right. Can you read the headline? Let's see. Can you go... I don't have it up right now, that story that broke on this... I don't know when it broke.
There's a number of headlines. So the original Gawker headline, I believe, was AT&T's worst security flaw, 144,000 iPad owners exposed, was the Gawker headline.
Now, that's I don't mean to inject the religious stuff too early in this interview, but 144,000, don't you find that interesting?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Oh, excuse me. It's 114,000. It's a little bit of a you know, so I guess of a Freudian slip there or an anti-Freudian slip.
Oh, right.
But yeah, it's 114,000.
Yeah, not much gets past me, Wave.
Absolutely, sorry.
I don't know if you've had a chance to enjoy any of my stuff yet, but yeah, I'm sure you'd enjoy it.
Absolutely.
Anyway, so but that's not all. There's this massive exploit. You were like, this is when I find. As a matter of fact, this is when I became aware of your existence, when this thing hit the wires. And later, maybe in the interview, I'll reveal why it is that you interest me, and why the discovery of your existence was such a revelation to me, and why I think it's important. But let's go forward. So you hit the big tech sites. Everybody was saying, Weave. And a couple years ago, there was an interview in the New York Times with you where you were supposedly some sort of big, important hacker, yet you were presented as, like, eccentric. Why don't you go into that as background, the New York Times interview?
Basically, this Jew from the New York Times, he, you know, I tried to, like, convey to him, like, the important philosophical things behind trolling. You know, he was like...
All right, let's not get into the trolling yet, because we're not even talking about that yet. But just say, you were presented... maybe unfairly as a extreme eccentric hacker.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, so you were primed for fame, and then you became truly famous last month with just exploit. I mean, I know people that know nothing about even the web who have heard of you after last month.
Absolutely. Okay.
But that's not all. Now, the first thing one should do when one has offended international jewelry in general and AT&T specifically is one should make sure that one has nothing in one's house that one would not be wanted to that would one would not want to be found during a warranted during a search with a warrant of your house. But unfortunately, something happened on the 16th of June.
I mean, that had to do
with this AT&T exploit. So there was a warrant to search your computers in your house.
I mean, they found, and I put found in quotes there, they found drugs in my house, and I can't.
Right. So they knocked on your door. They said, Mr. Orenheimer, we'd just like to come in right now. We have a piece of paper.
Oh no. They don't knock quietly. They kicked in my door.
Okay.
And, you know, they damaged the door frame. And they're
I think they knocked and kick it in within like 10 seconds or something.
Yeah, you know, something like that. I was asleep.
Right.
So all I know is that people are storming my house with guns, you know, and pointing them at me, essentially.
Okay. No, please describe it. This is what your fans want to hear.
Yeah, I mean, they're screaming, you know, search warrant. They're pointing guns at, you know, my friends, me, and that's basically how it.
Right. No, I don't want you to say anything specific about, like, you know, to make any specific allegations about the criminal campaign against you. But let's just say they found some LSD.
Yeah.
Okay. And we don't even have to discuss the other stuff because I believe that was the most. The other things were trace amounts, one pill or whatever. But they found, like, some substantial quality of LSD, but not enough to charge you with trafficking.
Correct.
Right. So they're not charging you with that, but you were up on, I think, 4 felony charges in Arkansas for that.
Yeah, correct. 4 felonies, 1 misdemeanor.
Were these feds or local police operating on a warrant from the feds?
These were feds.
These were feds that did the search?
Yes, correct.
But the charges are state charges?
Correct.
And you were in jail for about 3 days?
Yeah.
During which they gave you a lovely catch-22. Can you talk about the catch-22 with the warrant and the solitary?
Oh, yeah, okay. So they deliver me a subpoena from a grand jury.
Right.
And they put it in my belongings up front.
The grand jury has nothing to do with the drugs. That has to do with the AT&T stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So they deliver me this thing, and then I'm thrown into solitary. And they say if I don't answer this, I'll be held in contempt and dragged to Jersey. And so I'm in solitary. I can't call anybody.
How do you know this? How do you know, since you're in solitary, who communicates this to you?
Oh, they brought me up front for a second. You know, the FBI is like, oh, we're delivering you this subpoena. We'll just put it in your belongings.
But you can't read it.
Yeah, well, I got a quick glance at it, I suppose. How can I respond when I'm not allowed to see it, read it? You know, I don't get paper. You know, and when I ask for these things from the guard, he's like, well, file a request form. And then I have no request form. You know, it's a bunch of, it's totally Kafkaesque.
I think that's why I use the word catch-22.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's bullshit, you know, and they just do these things to sort of like try to wear you down, you know, and this is the same stuff that like the fucking Soviets would do. You know, this shouldn't happen to American citizens. It just shouldn't, you know, that we're supposed to be better. We were the greatest country in the world. And now we're just sort of
if this was Soviet Russia, you'd have to worry about horrible crimes like forced psychiatric care. It's a good thing we don't have to worry about that here.
Yeah, thank you, Reagan, for that particular one. I appreciate.
I was being sarcastic.
No, I mean you can thanks to Reagan, you can refuse any psychiatric treatment, and I really do appreciate that among other things, as long as you know you don't attack anybody, as long as you don't have any sort of violent outburst which could get you committed, then largely, especially if you claim to be a some sort of Christian scientist, which I do, I refuse to sign the medical release forms, and I inform people pretty loudly that my faith prohibits medical treatment. That's an important step you should do before you enter any sort of external, you know, unwilling care. And they're pretty respectful on that because the level of civil litigation precedent on that particular, the religious refusal to medical treatment is pretty strong.
So in other words, where the system's actually incorporated elements of libertarian idiocy take advantage of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so you're stuck in jail. After a few days, somehow you bonded out.
My bondswoman actually recognized my picture on in the news, and she came to get me. Thank God.
You knew her from a previous incident.
Yes, correct.
Is that previous incident still in litigation?
Yes. I have a trial on 21st. It is an imprisonable offense, and I have been refused a public defender
because of the $10 million that you said that you had stashed overseas.
No. They're not even given a real reason. They're saying that it's not a Class A misdemeanor. That's a minimum level of misdemeanor, which they hand out public defenders for. And that's not only in violation of national precedent. That's in violation of Arkansas state law. Title 16 Arkansas state law says that anyone who is not in sufficient financial shape to hire a private attorney can go to the court and request a certificate of indigency and get a, and fill it out. And they will be given indigency. However it's pronounced.
That's a tongue twister.
However it's pronounced.
Certificate that says you're indigent.
Yeah. It's clearly outlined in Title 16 of the Arkansas Code, and they're directly violating not just national law, not just the Constitution, but Arkansas state code.
Have you ever heard this one, Weave? Okay, you're questioning me, but you haven't Mirandized me. I thought you had to Mirandize a suspect before questioning him. Oh, that's only for felonies. You're just here for a misdemeanor, so we didn't bother. Have you ever heard that one?
Yeah, no, I haven't. I haven't heard that one.
Isn't that great?
That's pretty funny. Yeah.
And they get angry when you say things like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But so is there anything that, before we leave your case and go on to talk about other things, is there anything that you think that the gag order from the court, which is in reference to the AT&T thing, it's not in reference to the Arkansas charges, right?
Yeah, correct.
Okay. Is there any part of the things that they didn't want you to say that we haven't covered yet?
I think they just generally wanted me to not to talk about or try to lobby for public support on my case.
And you didn't for a while. I mean,
I didn't,
except for the free weave trolling lol stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I can't go to in this case, the EFF won't help, I haven't received a response from the ACLU. I need some sort of support on this.
Are they actually pursuing anything in that? Or they're convening a grand jury?
I believe they last time I heard the grand jury was still convening, and
how convenient.
They made the mistake.
It's a joke.
Yeah, of putting some of my friends on the stand, I believe, and thankfully
well,
that didn't
news.
Work out for them.
So you have friends.
Oh yeah. I mean, I don't have friends with money, but I have decent kids who basically gave me some good PR. In the grand jury
I wonder if they'll fly me to Jersey to testify just for interviewing you.
maybe so, you never know.
Maybe I could fly into Newark Airport. Do you know how Newark got its name?
No.
It was settled by Quakers. Newark.
Oh.
Newark.
Yeah. Well,
like
now
the
Ark
Covenant.
Yeah, it's filled with, blacks and Jews now, so...
Yeah, but it's a biblical name. You are.
Yeah, I didn't think about that, but yeah, I don't think there's any really Quakers left. I think they all moved.
By the way, today's riddle for today. What month... T.S. Eliot's poem, The Wasteland, opens with the line, April is the cruelest month. What is the most politically correct month?
I'm not sure.
July.
Oh, that's funny. That's
great. Okay, so let's leave the case. I'm sure we'll be hearing plenty more about it. But we wanted to get... Now that explains how I opened this show. Namely, there's the possibility, who knows, that they could try to enforce, quote-unquote, their gag order by, holding you in the tower from now on. I mean, it's not likely, but it's possible.
Yeah.
And so we had a motivation to tape the show today before the authorities have any idea what we're talking about.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible, but hopefully not. But I mean, some people have donated, so at least that's, you know, I got something out of speaking, and at least like I'll have like a talking point in the
okay,
media.
Okay, so let's just do this now. Let's stop for our little promo. Let's say, Free Weave. Weave needs your help. Weave is indigenous, or whatever the word is, and Weave needs your financial help in order to fight his legal battles against the Beast.
Definitely.
And so please, Weave, where can our listeners send money?
snailcricket@gmail.com via PayPal. That's a friend of mine is sort of collecting the funds.
Do you take GunPal too?
I don't. But should I? I mean,
GunPal is unlike PayPal in that if anything that's legal, you can use it for. So they don't like exercise restraint. Like, oh, we don't like your website because of the politics, so you can't collect from PayPal.
Yeah.
So yeah, GunPal is like because there was a site Atlas Shrugged recently that they recently cut off her ability to collect through PayPal because it was politically charged in some way, and it turns out that the relevant rule only says you can't sell things and get paid from PayPal if they are objectionable in some way, but she wasn't selling anything, she was just soliciting donations. But
yeah,
by the time PayPal took it back, she had gone to GunPal, which apparently you can't use PayPal to pay for guns over email. So
oh, wow.
GunPal is a PayPal alternative that was instituted for the purpose of buying and selling guns, but it's freer than PayPal. So right now, only PayPal. All right, so let's get to the second part of the show and talk about you more generally. We'll talk about trolling. We'll talk about maybe Antifa, if you know anything about them.
Yeah.
Trolling. What? You are a troll.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe the original troll.
Well, right? That would have been the earliest trolling I can pinpoint is it's probably going to be like the pre-Socratic philosophers.
What is trolling? Trolling, may I say that it has nothing to do with looking like one lives under a bridge.
Yeah.
Although
yeah,
it can, as we know.
I sort of have the bridge dweller beard going on, but yeah. But trolling is a style of dialogue to provoke thought or reaction, you know, and really the archetype that I live by is Zeno of Elea. Zeno was this guy, you know, and he was really into a philosopher.
Zeno shooting that arrow, how far will it go? Half the way there. Thank you. That's Jim McNeil's original. He was imitating Bill Murray, who had a shtick on Saturday Night Live many years ago. Although I don't know if Bill Murray talked about Zeno or if that's something McNeil made up. But anyway, go on.
So Zeno of Elea was really into his mentor Parmenides, and
right.
Parmenides like had this idea that everything is one. And they like there's no separation. I'm looking out the window. I see a garbage, you know, I see a garbage compressor, a GMC truck of some sort, and there's no real separation. Like I'm the same object as the garbage compressor. And
right.
The
GMC, this is where the pre-Socratics actually show unity with the old Sanskrit philosophers, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Tat Tvam Asi, and in fact, there's a fascinating essay by Wyndham Lewis called "The Physics of the Not Self."
Yeah.
Which deals with this. I don't know if you ever heard of Lewis.
Yeah, I have. So
anyway, go on. But this whole Tat Tvam Asi, thou art that. Okay. Parmenides
yeah.
down with that. Okay.
Definitely. So Zeno doesn't come up with any new ideas of his own. He just really efficiently defends that of his mentor. And he comes up with these paradoxes, you know, and ones like, you know, a line segment. No matter how many times you divide line segment, there's always going to be an infinite number of points on it, you know. And
right.
he comes up with a number of other paradoxes, and nobody can refute them. Nobody can refute them at the time because nobody had come up with the concept of limits in calculus yet. So,
but you don't need limits to do calculus. It can be developed entirely with hyperreal numbers or infinitesimals, just like
absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I was actually taught second year calculus using infinitesimals, believe it or not.
Awesome. Yeah, and that's the thing is nobody had a lot of the concepts yet, so they all called him a sophist. You know, they all said that.
Now, a sophist is sort of like a casuist, a Jesuit casuistry. Is that right?
Yeah, something like that. It's like the, you know, like he was disingenuous in his arguments. They all said that he was sort of a fraud. And that's just because he like intellectually just wiped the floor with everyone around him. And then
but he was also saying things like, there is no such thing as motion.
Yeah. I mean, it does get a little out there, you know, but it sort of like makes sense if you sort of think about it from a specific perspective. But the underlying thing is that later calculus was invented so that somebody could come up with like a way to argue against Zeno's paradoxes. That was the first application of calculus. So he trolled so hard that hundreds of years later, somebody, you know, invented a whole new system of mathematics. A millennia later, just to continue the dialogue that he started. And that's what I see is
So you're saying, to skip forward a little bit in the argument, when you troll, it might be an effort to elicit some kind of response from God knows who.
Yeah, correct.
Right.
Exactly. I mean trolling is something that his it's a style of dialogue that's advanced human thought many, many times. I consider Jesus, you know, another troll I hold very dear to my heart is Christ, and any prophet is going to be sort of a dick and troll a lot. That's always been sort of universal. So, but you see a lot of trolling in mathematics and philosophy as well. You see a lot of troll type people there. So if you read the book,
so trolling is basically. Trolling involves deliberately speaking in such a way as to make other people angry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
And there's a famous battle between Wittgenstein that ended in a supposedly someone brandishing a hot poker.
Karl Popper.
Yeah, Wittgenstein and Popper.
Wittgenstein. Yeah. Right. Well, right. Let's see. No, you've got the story mixed up. Popper was speaking about morality shortly after World War II, I think. And he was talking about, like something about moral rules, something like that. And Wittgenstein was listening to him and poking the fire with a poker. And advanced on Popper with the poker still in his hand and said, give me an example of one of these so-called moral rules. And Popper looked at Wittgenstein and said, well, I think for starters, maybe, don't brandish a hot poker at a visiting lecturer.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I mean, I'm entirely, now, of course, they were both Semitically challenged, as you know. But my sympathies are much more with Wittgenstein than with Popper. And let me say, the Wittgenstein, not of the Tractatus, like idiots like Saul Kripke keep talking about, but the later Wittgenstein, the Wittgenstein of the Investigations.
Yeah. Okay. I think that trolling is a good moral force. And there was a friend of mine who was on LiveJournal. Which is a service I've used for many, many years, and this friend says to me, you know what's the worst thing about the troll scene being dead on LiveJournal? There's all these furries and all these pedophiles, the people who like fan fiction, and they're running around freely, wearing their degeneracy on their sleeve, and nobody even says anything to them. And I think that's the core is that in this modern age is that there's so many people who think that liberalism is a license to do and say anything, no matter how disgusting or sick, and they don't
Without trolls, then there's nobody to go to those people and tell them they really belong in an oven.
can we just take a minute to talk about the furry thing?
Yeah, okay? Sure thing.
I understand your opposition to the fan fiction furry sexual degenerates. Let me make a confession, because you would find this out sooner or later, and I don't want to have any hard trouble from you or your friends because of it. Over the past few years, I've spent time in Second Life and related worlds, primarily because I think the technology is interesting, and I would like to see if we can organize some sort of nationalism in virtual space. It hasn't worked out very well. But the point is, when I entered Second Life, you have a choice of basically what you look like, what your avatar looks like. And I think the human-like avatars, the humanoid avatars in Second Life are frankly creepy. I don't like them. And so yeah. I decided to be a furry, to be a fennec fox. And I like that, and I've always stayed that. So my point is, I don't want to be accused of being a degenerate furry simply because that's the skin I wear in Second Life.
Okay. I mean, I'm not going to call for a pogrom on you, nothing, right?
I wanted to explain that. It's not that it has nothing to do with the admittedly quite degenerate depths that fanfiction furries go to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't consider myself a fur. I don't think of myself as an animal. To me, there's nothing sexual about Second Life. It's merely that, you know, I prefer to be a cartoon fox than an uncanny valley like disgusting humanoid, you know, thing.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. So I just wanted to say that. Okay. So now. Okay, I'm a majority rights listener. I'm listening to this radio show, and I'm saying, I check into you a little bit, and I wonder, well, this Weave person talks about, like, opposing degeneracy and being interested in Jesus and Wittgenstein, and then I find out that he is the leader of a group of people who say the absolutely vilest things, and, I mean, his IRC channel is GNAA, GNAA. Would you like to talk about the GNAA? I mean, just explain, just to demonstrate how much it will confuse people.
Yeah. I mean, the GNAA is just an organization dedicated to spreading truth and justice across the world for
but
all men and all people.
But what does it stand for?
It stands for whatever the people in it want it to stand for.
Okay, so you don't want to say that in this interview. That's fine. Okay.
No. Its mission statement sort of has varied from time to time.
Okay, so it might mean different things.
Yeah, there was a previous president, Dickie Hardy's, and before that there was Time Pop, and they had a much different idea of what they wanted to do with the organization than I did.
So you're not willing to cop and take the blame for like the. This right okay so fine you don't want to say that's fine but
no, no
but
I'll give you an example of this sort of thing that we've done is there's a website called Dreamwit, and Dreamwit is started by a woman named Denise Paolucci, who I got fired from LiveJournal, and Denise Paolucci was the leader of the support team there and was very heavily entrenched in the pedophilic fan fiction scene, and now Dreamwit is
those guys are trying to set up Al Gore. I read a comment that the masseuse who accused Al Gore of trying to molest her, that her account to the police sounded very much like steamy R-rated vice presidential fan fiction.
Yeah. She looks like, she's pretty ugly. She looks like someone who would write.
Oh, come on. You know what? Don't be misogynistic. She looks like a nice lady in her 50s, okay? Actually,
yeah.
She does.
I mean, if we're going to, you know, hit on some sort of suit, I would at least choose to try.
Have you seen the recreation from the Taiwanese TV network, the with the animated recreation? Of his,
I haven't.
Oh, it's really funny. All the dialogue is in Chinese, of course, but yeah. They have the crazed sex poodle. It's really funny.
All right, well, check that out. So we basically pulled the docs of everybody on.
Hello.
Yeah, hello. I believe the Zog conspiracy has been disrupting our call quality, and then actually dropped our call.
Absolutely.
But I didn't think we were at the end of our discussion.
Absolutely. What was the last thing you heard me say?
I don't know, because the quality got bad. I'm going to have to go back and edit part of it out. So if you're listening at home, you can take it for granted that something really important got left out or elided in the middle here. And that's really what our message is about. It's about forcing you to reconstruct the true kernel of the message.
Absolutely. So this group, DreamWidth...
That's what Gnosticism is about.
Yeah, this site, DreamWidth, is a haven for pedophiles, and really one of the primary projects that has been, you know, my goal as the sort of president of the GNAA is just sort of encouraging people to hunt these people down where they live and work and ruin their lives, you know, and just by letting people know the type of people they associate with, you know, is
Well, I certainly hope you guys do a better job than the Antifa are doing on me, because they've tried to do that.
Oh yeah, we're much funnier. I mean, the thing is that God is on our side and not on theirs, you know, and that's largely the difference. But I mean, I really, you know, I'm disappointed in society at large for, you know, they're going after me, but they're not going after people who are publishing material, which I mean, I have a spreadsheet here. It's a little bit out of date, but it's got, you know, people writing stories about children as young as six, and there's incest, rape, mutilation, you know, student teacher fetishism, you know, body modification, torture, analingus, you know, public sex, cross-dressing, humiliation, and physical abuse and bestiality, all with, you know, underage characters. I mean, this stuff clearly violates the Miller test for obscenity. Like, these people are...
Well, you know, the internet, you know what the internet needs, Senator Pelfrey? It needs a good hard rain.
Maybe so.
Wash all this stuff down into the sewers. Okay, so could I just take us off on another tangent and tell you why it is that I was so interested when I found out that you existed, and why I have devoted like the better part of the last month in social engineering myself into your confidence to the point when you're giving me an interview.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, here's the reason. Over the years, at Majority Rights especially, and at other sites like Occidental Dissent, we have had recurrent commenters on posts, people like Silver. They have many, many names. And trolls who are trying to get people upset, agitate, work against our site, disrupt the conversation. It was always my impression that these people were working for the enemy. And in fact, they may have been. But what I thought most, if not all, trolls were either not necessarily J, but, you know, at least J affiliated, J defending.
Yeah. I mean,
what I did not realize was that there is a large, important group of high IQ troll hackers who are very close in what they're thinking to the new rights sites, places like Majority Rights.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I didn't realize that you people existed. And apparently you guys really haven't taken much notice of my existence. At least I haven't heard from you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you're familiar with the website corrupt.org or Amos, the American Nihilist Underground.
I've looked at it, but let me say something. I had always not paid much attention to these places.
Yeah, I mean,
here's why. Let me tell you why. Because I'm not like you. I don't think it's funny to post pictures of like some guy exposing himself like the Goatsy man. I'm prissy, maybe. I mean, yeah. I just like to talk about myself or about my issues in a serious way. When I have jokes, they're based on, like, the kind of puns that people don't enjoy and sort of meta-level humor that people don't get. But I just don't speak in that way. And there's this thing at Encyclopedia Dramatica and LiveJournal and Corrupt and all these places. That is not my style. I'm driven off by that. And so I had never given you guys a chance and realized here is a group of high IQ whites who are open to right-wing ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
I had never realized that. And that's why I was excited.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the same spirit that pervades the internet troll scene is the same thing that made people dress up as Indians and throw tea in the water. You know,
is
we have to use humor now because look at me. I just on the basis of doing really hilarious parody, I've been raided by the feds. If you're too upfront and you're too serious and you start getting people to listen, they'll just come after you like, you know, Ruby Ridge or Waco, you know.
I think that's what you're saying, but I think that's part of your game. I haven't said everything I've figured out about you. What I have developed is, see, I have certain the things I talk about are very dangerous to talk about.
Yeah.
But I have a certain degree of protection or protective coloration. My protection has always been that people find it very difficult to understand what I'm actually talking about. Yeah. It's just by nature. I like to speak in certain ways that just are not that accessible to people. And I also, I'm clever enough that I don't need to stoop to saying things in a crude way in order to get attention. I'm always able to express my point in such a way that at least certain people can understand it. But anyway, that's my protection, that people don't understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You have another protection.
Yeah.
Right? Let me tell you what your protection is. Your protection is a rhetorical strategy where it's chaffing, if you know.
Yeah,
it's chaffing. You mix what you really believe in with a bunch of stuff that you don't believe.
Yeah,
and interesting, and it's all equally offensive because what you actually believe is as offensive and dangerous as the things you say that you don't believe. And
Definitely. And
personally speaking, I don't believe that your iProfit stuff is just a joke. Although I think the first one was with the pinata that was somewhat of a joke.
Yeah.
But I don't believe it. I actually think your thoughts about the New Testament, Martin Luther, and stuff. I believe you're sincere about that. Now, if not, maybe you're trolling me. Maybe you're an Antifa honeypot. But I don't think so. I don't think anybody among our opponents, our enemy, is clever enough to do what you've done.
Definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
You can say for public consumption, oh, look at me. I have a last name that proves I'm Jewish. You know. I mean, okay. I found your last name, Arnheimer, on a list of German/Jewish names. Guess what else? Guess who else's name I found there? I found my own last name, Renner, on the same list. So it proves nothing.
Definitely.
Now,
I mean,
maybe you have a little Mischling in your ancestry. I don't think it's a lot. But in any case, you had this thing in your essay where you had a couple of paragraphs implying that your anti-Semitism was all a big spoof, all a big joke, and people were stupid if they didn't see you were just a Jew making fun of anti-Semitism. But you didn't say this. You implied it.
Yeah. I mean,
I'm saying, you're not pulling my leg, Mr. Arnheimer. I don't believe a word of it. It took me a very long time. It took me almost a month to see through your strategy until I believed, I trusted what I was seeing.
No. I think that the ultimate irony is that many strong Zionists can go around suggesting violence against Palestinians, and what they say they are never ever sanctioned for. But the minute someone with Jewish, even with Jewish heritage, runs around, you know, suggesting equality, you know, towards the actions towards the Jews, is that they get severe federal government interference, as I have, for completely legal. Huh?
Do you know the name Fred Scrooby? He's just a commenter at Majority Rights. What?
I don't. Sorry.
He had a funny suggestion a few years ago, which is the funny joke is, think of the compulsion to critique one society, the society that one is embedded in, as a Jewish allele. It's an allele at some genetic position. So if you have this gene, you're actually impelled by this gene to go out and attack the society you live in. And his joke was, well, if you get two copies, it overexpresses and you attack Israel.
Yeah.
You know, right?
Absolutely.
So they're like homozygous instead of heterozygous. That's just a joke. But I don't really understand I mean, I understand. I'm not in complete sympathy with people who either say the Muslims are the enemy, let's support the Jews, or the Jews are the enemy, let's support the Muslims. I mean, I think, this is the fortunate thing. The word anti-Semitism actually means against Semite.
Yeah.
Semitic
racism.
And I think if you're serious about being an anti-Semite, you have to be serious all the way through.
Absolutely.
And
I mean,
the Jews and the Arabs.
Yeah. I mean, I don't. I just want the right to live freely on my own land, and not be, you know, taxed into oblivion. Not be forced to live next to people who I have no interest in living next to. And I do want peace. You know, I really want. You know,
yes.
A big farm with some cows on it, and that's really all that I want. And that's the thing, is that I don't believe that it'll be there for my children.
Let me lay. I think this is Plato on you. Only the dead have seen the end of war.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think that we could end the war, but people would have to renounce, you know, both all sorts of philosophies that are not cohesive to lasting peace. You know, Judaism, Islam are among them, and there are others. You know, certain Hindu sects I do think that Christianity is superior. You know,
do you know that Kant had an essay, Perpetual Peace, which is about politics and other things? Have you ever heard of it?
I haven't. I was no fan of Kant personally.
Anyway, the funny thing, Kant has a sense of humor. He starts this essay with a story about an inn, you know, a place where people went to drink. And as you know, in the old days, they used to have wooden signs with carvings or paintings on them because people were illiterate. So you would go to the Three Pigs, it had a picture of three pigs, right? On the inn. You've heard of that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was an inn, the innkeeper wanted to name it the Perpetual Peace because he was a pacifist, but he couldn't think of what icon to put up. And then he finally figured out, you know, put a tombstone.
Yeah, yeah. But,
yeah.
But
well,
yeah.
I don't, so you aren't familiar enough with my stuff yet, I think, to know if you're in complete, if you're in agreement with me.
I'm
not chumming for attention here. I'm just saying, you know, in a way, you and I may be competing to see who can be more extreme and more obscure at the same time.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Don't be so sure you're going to win this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so we have a few minutes left. Can we please talk about my ray tracer?
Sure thing. I like that video. That was good.
Okay, so the video I made for the Weave song was a small bit of computer-generated footage with your face in it, in a Sierpinski cube. And then it was, to pad out the song length, a couple other videos I'd taken in the tracer of different computer graphic stuff without you. And that remaining part, it has horrible compression artifacts in it, and I wanted to explain to you where those came from. So I had these movies that I'd already made in the tracer, and I opened them up, but they were already compressed. They were already MP4 compressed, and I opened them up in Cinelera and put them together with the thing I had just done, which was composed of BMP images, which had been transferred to PNG images and then like loaded into Cinelera just in as a batch. So the movie, when I started to render it out into a compressed format, the first part was like, had gone in as PNG images and was not compressed before. But the second part was, had already been uncompressed, and I recompressed it. And I think what happened is I had a different like quantization number or something on the compression. But anyway, I'd never seen those horrible artifacts before. And they arose from that decompression, recompression in Cinelera, which just goes to prove you should always keep your footage in uncompressed formats and render it out that way, and only compress when you need to. But I left it that way and put it up there for a reason, even though it was horrible, because it matches your aesthetic.
Definitely.
Because your aesthetic is to always put in something brilliant and always put in something crappy.
Definitely. I mean, we're sort of like the Dadaists that way.
Well,
you know, we really are.
My point is, I thought, I was hoping that you would pick up on that, that I had done that deliberately. Did you?
No, I didn't. But I do appreciate the sentiment there. There is.
Okay,
that is so, definitely. An anti-aesthetic is sort of what we're sort of gunning for here.
So, the images that made up those movies weren't rendered in real time because my computer isn't quite fast enough to do 30 of those a second. But the way it's done is I have a small and a large window that I ray trace in, and in the small window, which is much faster, of course, I do a fly through, and then I just play back the fly through in the large window, which is many more rays. So it might be like, you know, half a second per image or less than that. And then I write those out to a bitmap files. Then I transfer them over to Linux, and I bind them into a... But the idea behind the ray tracer is that eventually real-time graphics will be done with volumetric fractal ray tracing like this. And I was wondering, have you in your life taken 5 minutes to look into what I've done there?
I haven't.
Okay, so we'll talk about that next time.
All right.
Because I'm sure you know something about, like, polygon graphics and stuff.
You know, I really don't know that much about it. And it's despite being a programmer, I'm really not a spatial person at all. Like, I have really low spatial intelligence. So I never really bothered to learn graphics programming. And, you know,
you're sandbagging. Well, anyway, I'm doing it a completely different way that nobody has taken an interest in, you know, which is not rational. People should have been interested. But unfortunately, I'm actually at a point where somebody's interested in me for one thing. If somebody's interested in me for the graphics, hypothetically, he'll look at my politics and say, I'll have to stay the fuck away from this, you know? And if somebody's interested in me for my politics, he'll look at me and say, I don't want to end up talking about ray tracing with some computer nerd. You see?
definitely.
Right. But actually, I had an idea based on this for your community, which is I have a video up which actually shows the tracer running live over VNC, Virtual Network Computer Connection. And so far, it would only work on a local network with a kind of crudely represented world. The only reason it would have to be local because the operating system I'm using has VNC, but it doesn't have JPEG compression in VNC. So it's feeding raw images. But you know the Second Life world?
Not familiar. I've never played Second
Life. It's basically a glorified chat program except with full 3D world and building tools. But I was thinking it would be fun to have a real-time ray-traced virtual world chat program. Except the difference would be we wouldn't synchronize world data across clients and ensure that they had the same representation of the world, and then use graphics hardware on local clients to render the world for each viewer. The synchronization turns out to be very, very difficult. Instead, we would have we would render centrally, and we would just send video streams. Which, of course, if you're going to do really high-end graphics on, say, an iPhone, is what you have to do anyway. So a Second Life client on the iPhone has to render somewhere else in the iPhone and stream the video.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you might want to.
Yeah, find people who care about that and go to a party with them.
No, there's a way to do crap. I've done VNC like streaming before, I'm pretty sure, and there's a way to like MPEG it before or compress it somehow before it goes out to.
Generally JPEG, not MPEG, because MPEG depends on having success. There's a lag because you have to buffer with MPEG because you need successive frames to get the motion vectors. So if you're just compressing each frame at a time, you use JPEG. No, I'm saying the operating system I have doesn't even have JPEG compression in their VNC. It's not Linux. It's something very obscure. It's an Oberon-based system. But I'm saying we could write that. But I like the idea of having a virtual world where all you're serving is image streams. Anyway, look at my explanatory video.
All right, I'll check it out.
So I'm actually going to mix this up now using Audacity, into a show and put it on Majority Rights Radio today. And shall we force them to listen to the stuff about ray tracing? I think we will. And let me say, if they don't seize you and take you to the dungeon in New Jersey to keep you from talking, if we talk again, I would like you to maybe talk to James Bowery. Do you know who he is?
I don't. I'll try to get a hold of him. Give me his contact info on the chats.
James Bowery is, do you know the Plato computer learning project at the University of Illinois?
They
invented the web like 20 years in advance. So in the 70s, he was one of the very bright young kids who worked at University of Illinois in the Plato project. And so I think he's about 55 now. But he is like an original computer hacking genius. He wrote SpaceSim, which is the first 3D networked real-time space flight combat game. Right? So,
yeah.
But the point is, he's smart like you're smart, except probably more visual. But he's hacking smart, but he's, you know, like 30 years older, which is makes him very interesting, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you'll see. And he actually has a theory. Last thing I'll do is I'll run this theory by you. He has a theory that there is an IQ threshold over which the lies given to you in your education don't take, but it's more complicated than that. He thinks the IQ threshold has been dropping every decade, so that where you might have needed a very high IQ in the 1970s to see through it, now not so much.
Yeah, that's potentially possible. It's I mean, I personally have a very low IQ score. You wouldn't think that.
You know what? You know what? Don't even sandbag me, man.
No. I have a very low IQ, but it's because that IQ tests are biased for spatial intelligence. I'm linguistically extremely intelligent, and clearly I am because my rhetoric has successfully manipulated a lot of people.
You do not have a low. You know what? This is just.
But I am fucking spatially a goddamn fucking retard. I really am, My IQ score is below 100, not far below 100,
no,
but it's nothing impressive, you know. I would appear to be an average man if you looked at my IQ score, and I know that I'm smarter than the average bear, but it's solely my ability to manipulate language and rhetoric that sort of sets me apart, and that's something that's not really reflected in my IQ score.
Well,
I have to let you go. My battery is dead, like right now.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye, dude. Thanks for the chat.
All right, bye, Asher.